Technorama episode 639. Forget costs. Neutrons are free of charge. Hey, welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. If you're returning, welcome back. This is the podcast for people who know which family occasions when it's appropriate to wear a pocket protector.
Yeah.
Right?
Weddings and bar mitzvahs, actually,
The true listeners of this know, when is it appropriate to have a pocket protector at a wedding, a birthday party, a funeral?
Funeral. Sure. Yeah, that's right.
I couldn't resist.
Were you looking at the Molly Manners website? You know, or
no. Is that a... there's a local radio station here, and they stick in these little things in between the songs, you know, right before they do a commercial break or right after a commercial break. They say, the whole point of the weekend isn't to get drunk, but why not? No, just little things like that.
Right. Like,
I'm working on a wicked Monday morning hangover.
Right. Oh, boy.
So I thought we could come up with something equivalent for this podcast. And That's what jumped into my head. It's like, hey,
yeah,
our listeners know when it's appropriate to wear a pocket protector. All right. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good, except for the cat kind of threw me off there. I was like, what is that on my leg? Oh, it's cats.
Do they like reach up and start clawing you when they want something?
No, if they did that, they would be ejected out of the room. I just felt something tickling bottom of my leg. I'm like, what is that? Oh, it's the stupid cat. Yeah.
It's Juno with a feather duster. Tickle, 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 tickle.
Yeah, right. No, Juno's holding down the floor. The cat's moving around.
Because, you know, the floor tends to fly away. What do you say We get into our feedback, our question of the week?
Sure.
Let's try this button. That's the right one.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
Da 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 da.
Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out.
On this day in history.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman, mail today.
You rang.
Yeah. No, it's nobody Lurch.
Surprised we haven't done a Lurch on that one yet.
Yeah.
You rang. You rang. Our question of the week. I can only do that because I did a lot of karaoke this weekend. My voice is a little raw. Question of the week goes, what was the most overrated product you have ever purchased?
Oh, I've got an answer.
Oh, what's your answer?
Probably smartwatches.
Did you have some real losers or what?
Well, yes, there's been some losers, but I'd say the Samsung ones are probably the best I've had. The some of the other ones is kind of, you know, just not quite live up to the hype. I don't know.
How many have you had? You've had more than I have.
Oh, well. Do I want to talk about this in public?
Maybe we should save that for the Patreon show.
I could. I do have several different models here.
All right. Wade Thompson says, any tablet. Really? Overhyped or overrated? Huh. Okay. I've always gone in with full expectations. I mean, I do my research on gadgets like that so that they're not overrated. Reading reviews and whatnot.
I would say probably Android tablets for sure. iPad, I think, is probably lived up to a lot of its hype, but until recently, there was a lot of things it didn't do, file management and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff that it's people are wanting it to do more like a computer than just a tablet. So
some people, I won't say all people.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you gotta remember the average consumer is getting a tablet so they can read books, watch Netflix or Hulu or whatever. Check their email, browse the internet. You know, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, you're right. No. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying for tablets, I would say probably Android tablets because that it seems like it's been a work in progress ever since they started. However, I do have a a Lenovo Duet, which is a Chromebook tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually works pretty good because you got the full browser and all that accoutrement to go with it. But I can install Android apps on it. So it works really well.
All right. Next answer. John Miller Jr. says, Coast soap claims to be the eye opener. Causes me to close my eyes every time I get it in my eyes. Talk about false advertising. How about Mentos?
Maybe he should try Irish Spring. Because legend has it, when you use Irish Spring,
what was that other one?
You'll stay fresh for the rest of your days.
Lever 2000. It's good for all the 2000 parts. Yeah. Just stop focusing on that one part, okay?
Yeah. moving along.
I didn't tell you what part. Could have been your elbow. You just took that in your the wrong direction.
Toe. Yeah, your big toe.
Which one? I have two. Steve Lennon says, the easy answer would have been life, as it is highly overrated, exaggerated, and full of disappointments. Wow.
Is that a product?
Thank you, Mr. Sunshine.
Life as a product?
Yes, I'm okay. Being sarcastic. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I figured you were. But then again, you can't buy a life. So it will have to be the high-tech surveillance kit that I ordered from some catalog as a kid. Useless. Oh, man, that brings up out visions of X-ray specs.
Yeah, I did buy those, by the way.
I ended up building my own phone tapping kit after that and could listen to the neighbor's phone calls with.
Ooh.
That sounds highly illegal.
Yeah. You know what? He's got a good point. Playing around with phones back in the day, you know, like learning how to everything from using a modem to it to figuring out how you can, I don't know, do three different things. It was actually a fun thing to play with, you know, just trying to, I played around with phone recorders and, I don't know, it's just hard to explain. There's all kinds of little neat little things you could use to be able to do with landlines.
Were you talking digital or rotary?
probably a little more in the digital. Right. There was plenty of rotary phones around here for a long time, though.
Oh, yeah.
Seemed like they
there wasn't much to play with on the rotary phone. I was like playing with a block of wood.
Yeah, it was.
Although we had some imagination. We had a wood box in our workroom, my dad's workroom, where he would throw all the scraps. You know, you get this 4-inch piece of 2x4 that you like throw it in there. We would then make toys out of it. We'd make little bulldozers and whatnot and go out in the sandbox. You take two pieces of wood and you shape them into a T and
right
instant bulldozer.
Yeah.
And if you're really good,
have fun, kids.
If you're really good, you put a very small block on top to act as a cabin.
Yeah. Right. Hey, well, speaking of rotary phones, I don't know why I was just thinking about this, but I mentioned modems, but you ever dialed out on your modem, putting it in like a rotary mode?
The old acoustic couple ones had a switch you had to flip one way or the other for rotary or touch tone. Yep.
I was thinking probably the early 300 baud, maybe even 1200 baud. They had the ones I had on my Commodore. I remember it had a rotary mode and I flipped this. I did it one time. It wasn't a switch. It was like a software thing. And I remember going, you could hear it clicking, you know, like.
You know what that was? That was effectively the same as flipping the hook switch.
Sure. I know, but it was just the modem was doing it. I said, dial 803, whatever. And then we, I just thought it was cool. Anyway.
All right. We just showed off our age again. Let's get out of the feedback section.
Like we hide any of that.
This is where all the 18-year-old, the 28-year-olds are going, these guys are old.
You know what? It's been our shtick the whole time, Chuck.
Yeah, we've been doing this for 16 years. How did we start old?
Right.
That's not right. All right, history time.
Okay.
Sit back, kids. You might just learn something. Because it's time for On This Day in History for May 5th, 2021. Happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way.
Same to you.
This is the 125th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 240 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 1494 that Christopher Columbus landed on the island of Jamaica and claimed it for Spain. Oh, how kind of him to do that.
Yeah, that was nice. Also today, in 1809, Mary Keyes became the first woman awarded a U.S. patent for a technique of weaving straw and silk and thread.
That sounds like Rumpelstiltskin's story. Oh, wait. No, that was spinning it into gold.
Right. Actually, I think she was working on string theory.
Or straw theory. May 5th, 1835, the first railway in continental Europe opened between Brussels and Mechelen. I hope I said that even close.
That sounds good to me. It was also 130 years ago today that the Music Hall in New York City, later known as Carnegie Hall, had its grand opening for the first public performance with Tchaikovsky and the guest conductor.
It wasn't Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. It was Frank Tchaikovsky.
Frank. Jerry.
Steve Tchaikovsky.
Yeah, that's right.
It was his distant cousin. It was also on this date in 1925 that John T. Scopes was served an arrest warrant as part of the Scopes trial for teaching evolution in violation of the Butler Act.
And that same date in 1961, Alan Shepard became the first American to travel to outer space on a suborbital flight. And yes, he returned.
It was 1 year ago today. Wow, someone's code needs some work on the plurals. Yeah. 1 year ago today that the National Telecommunications Commission issued a cease and desist order to ABS-CBN to stop the operations of its free TV and radio stations 1 day after their 25-year congressional franchise expired. Wow, so gracious of them. They're probably waiting just to send that cease and desist letter. It's like, here we go, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, hit the send button.
Okay. Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Send button. Like they're going to send him an email.
It was. It was last year.
Oh, 1 year ago today. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why I was thinking.
It was like 1825. Happy birthday goes out in this date to German geographer and academic Ferdinand von Richthofen, born on this date in 1833.
And also born May 5th, 1883, American mathematician Anna Johnson Pell Wheeler.
Helen Redfield, the American geneticist, was born 121 years ago today.
And author Leonard Scott Plow was American physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate, was born on that same date in 1921.
Born May 5th, 1923, Canadian mathematician Kathleen Synge Moravec.
And English actor and screenwriter Michael Palin was born on this same date in 1943.
That Michael Palin from Monty Python?
That Michael Palin.
Also turning 77 today is Welsh actor and screenwriter John Rhys Davies.
An American
Nobody throws a dwarf.
American screenwriter and producer John Weinstein is born, or is 55 today.
Try that first name again. It's not John.
Oh, Josh. It's not an N.
Not Josh. To be confused with the Josh Weinstein of Mr. Science Theater 3000. English singer-songwriter Adele, whatever her last name is. She was born 1988. We are getting old.
Yes, actually, people have been being born since then, too.
If she had been at our wedding, somebody would have had been carrying her.
You're right.
Listener birthdays today include May 5th, John Michkowski, host of On the Podcast. May 6th, we have four birthdays. Amber Pace, not really a listener, but a mother and wife of listeners.
Sure.
You know,
of listeners, multiple.
We've probably used this joke before, but I have to say it again in case we didn't. Secondhand listening to Technorama could be hazardous to your mental health.
And those around you.
May 6th, Bill Barber. May 6th, Steve Bickle. May 6th, Brian Brown. Wait, I thought...
That Brian Brown?
Yes, that Brian Brown. May 8th, Curtis Parrish. Happy birthday to all of you. If it's your birthday and we didn't get you on here, well, you know, there's a way to fix that. I have this button that says, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and get your birthday on the birthday list. There you go. Yeah, it's pointing for the people who are watching.
That's right.
It's right down there. Chuckchat.com/wiki. Or if you like the new link, it does the same thing. Chuckchat.com/birthday. Get your birthday on there. We will give you the shout out at the appropriate time of year. That's the way it was on this day in history for May 5th, 2021. Let's put that title away, get the band. Okay, you guys can leave.
Yeah, see you. The door's that way.
Okay. Just once, I'd like to have this noise of like a band going clunk, 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 all the instruments as they're rushing out of the room.
Oh, okay. Well, you can do it.
I'm sure. Maybe it's in that BBC archive somewhere. We could make a composite something.
Yeah, band tripping.
Band leaving room with instruments. You hear the cymbals.
Band leaving hastily.
Let's do the news, shall we?
Sure.
Good news, nobodies.
All right, I'll start with this one. From SciTech Daily. Hopefully there's no ads in here. MIT is on course to create a fusion power plant. Sweet. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, it's fusion, not much.
How an MIT engineering course became an incubator for fusion design innovations. Quote, there is no lone genius who solves all the problems.
The lone genius is the one you have to watch out for. He's not with the breast of the pack.
Lone genius? Oh, he had his sidekick, Tontor.
Tontor.
Hi-yo, silver oxide. I don't know. Dennis White, director of the Plasma Science and Fusion Center, or PSFC, is reflecting on a guiding belief behind his nuclear science and engineering class 22.63, entitled Principles of Fusion Engineering. He has recently watched his students working in teams, making their final presentations on how to use fusion technology to create carbon-free fuel for shipping vessels. Since taking on the course over the decade ago, White has moved away from standard lectures, prodding the class to work collectively on finding solutions to, quote, real-world issues. One of the most overused terms in college, by the way.
Right, real world.
Over the past years of the course and its collaborative approach to design has been instrumental in guiding the real future of fusion at the PSFC, which is the Personal Safety Flotation Committee. I can't, whatever it's good for. For decades, researchers have explored fusion, the reaction that powers the sun, as a potential source of virtually endless carbon-free energy on Earth. MIT has studied the process with a series of Alcator tokamaks. Those are just fun words to say.
Okay.
It could be even taken dirty. You dirty Alcator. Hey, keep your hands off my tokamaks. Anyway, those are compact machines that they're not what we think.
I've had a dime for every time I heard that.
You dirty Alcator. They're compact machines that use high magnetic fields to keep the hot plasma inside and away from the walls of a donut-shaped vacuum vessel long enough for fusion to occur. But understanding how plasma affects tokamak materials, or maybe it's tokamak, who knows, and making plasma dense and hot enough to sustain fusion reactions has been elusive, to say the least. The second time he taught the course, White was ready for his students to attack problems related to net energy tokamak operation necessary to produce substantial and economical power. These problems could not be explored with the PSFC's Alcator CMOD tokamak. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. They're adding more things in here.
Right. They're making up words.
Probably. They sound like words that came off of like Stargate SG-1 or something. Quick, it's the tokamak.
It's a tokamak.
Fire the Alcator. Well, it maintained fusion in only brief pulses, but they could be studied by a class tasked with designing a fusion device that can be operated around the clock. Around this time, White learned of high-temperature superconducting HTS tape, a newly available class of superconducting material that supported creating higher magnetic fields for effectively confining the plasma. It had the potential to surpass the performance of the previous generation of superconductors like niobium tin. They were attacking the tokamak on SG-1, by the way.
Niobium tin, that was on Star Trek.
Well, that was being used in ITER to the burning plasma fusion experiment being built in France. Could the class design a machine that would answer the question about steady state operation while taking advantage of this revolutionary product? The mind boggles. Furthermore, what if components of the machine could be easily taken out or replaced or altered, making the tokamak return to their home world or make them more flexible in different experiments?
Return to their home world.
Well, speaking of home worlds, what the class conceived was a tokamak called Vulcan. White causes, I'm not making this up, but it sure is fun to MST3K an article like this. White calls his students' efforts eye-opening, original enough to produce 5 peer-reviewed articles for Fusion Engineering and Design magazine or newsletter or whatever publication it is.
Newsletter. It's a zine.
It's a website. It's a blog. Although the tokamak design was never directly built, its exploration of demountable magnetic coils made from this new HTS tape suggested a path for a fusion future. Should have had the reverb on that one, but
yeah.
Okay. So we're getting close to fusion, it sounds like. Thanks, students. Should we really be, really be entrusting this to the students, or is it time to hand it off to the grown-up physicists?
The real world people. Well, I don't know. Well, actually, it's probably good to be in their hands because the cost is low.
This is way, way beyond.
No.
The elevator project the labor. I did in my senior student project.
No, I'm saying the labor is low because you got students working on it.
Right.
So,
well, you know, there's some value in that, right? You get what you pay for.
That's right. But
good on them. That's why I never went to IT. Yeah. I mean, MIT.
MIT. Yeah. You give them a break.
I did have something to do with IT somewhere in my career, but I can't remember it.
Well, anyway, so speaking of energy, Toyota has built an internal combustion engine that sips hydrogen. And the article states, it sounds awesome.
So is it as cool as the tokamak attacking the Vulcans?
I don't know. It probably tops this, but let's see. So Japanese auto giant Toyota is working on a new age hydrogen vehicle. When the words Toyota and hydrogen are in the same sentence, the hydrogen-powered Toyota Mira, which I haven't seen that, comes to mind. I haven't seen one of those. Still, the Mira is a hydrogen electric car, or FCEV. I'm not saying that all night. It uses hydrogen fuel to convert electricity and power and to power an onboard electric motor. This time, Toyota come up with something different. At the end of last year, we built a prototype that provided that car feeling, quote unquote. I don't know if the car feeling means leather interior and two-door, Ford's. Anyway.
Kick-ass bass and the stereo. I don't know.
That car lovers love, such as through sound and vibration, even though we were dealing with environmental technology, said Koji Sato, chief branding officer and Gazoo Racing Company president. Gazoo. I'm sorry. Probably some prestigious.
Wasn't that the little guy with the big head on Fred Flintstone, the Jetsons? On the
Flintstones? Flintstones?
Oh, the Flintstones. It was the Flintstones, right.
Yeah, the great Gazoo. It was only recently that I realized, as one thing led to another, that we could use technologies that we had on hand. So the car in the video, and there is a video attached to this article, is a Corolla hatchback fitted with hydrogen sipping internal combustion engine. It also has an all-wheel drive system from the mythical Toyota GR Yaris hot hatchback. Based on an exhilarating exhaust sound, you would think that hydrogen is at play here, but it is. Yeah, okay. It's two positives there. It only sounds fantastic, but the exhaust bark is no different than that from a tuned gasoline-powered vehicle. So Toyota claims that the fuel is 100% hydrogen with zero gasoline content. With no fossil fuels to burn, Toyota's initiative innovative hydrogen engine emits nearly no CO2. However, the car produces a certain amount of noxious gases as the engine burns hydrogen and oxygen from the air. It is not a zero emissions vehicle like a all-electric vehicle, but it is significantly emits less toxic substances than pure gasoline car.
Nearly no CO2. What noxious gases are there as you burn hydrogen and oxygen?
That's well, it says Toyota has hydrogen-related environmental technology cultivated through the Mira. It also has safety technology developed through the Yaris WRC. Thinking as a member of the automobile industry that it was important for motorsports to create a place where everyone can enjoy themselves, even carbon neutral area, where I decided to go with a hydrogen engine. You read that. I thought maybe it would say something around here, but
all right. Well, I'm just curious, but we've been working on hydrogen vehicles, fuel cell vehicles for quite some time. In fact, this last week's, Friday retro show on Tech Stuff was from 2014, I believe it was, with Jonathan Strickland talking about fuel cells.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, they're obviously doing it, but the problem is infrastructure.
Yes, still.
And I would probably argue the point that electrical charging stations, except for just your house, but are probably more prevalent now than hydrogen would be.
Oh,
you'd have to convert gas stations. And
despite the fact that there was, 2002, there was a big government prize for getting a hydrogen vehicle into production, went up by 2020. Right. And we all
never mind.
X Prize?
Yeah, well, yeah, something like that.
The Ignoble Prize, the Booby Prize, the Enterprise.
No, we got that.
the Enterprise. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's move on. We have one more. China has a satellite with an arm.
Oh, boy.
And America worries it could be used to snatch other spacecraft.
It works out. It's like this spaceship with a big cartoon arm hanging off of it.
One big beefy arm, like Trogdor.
Yeah, Trogdor. That's what I was thinking of.
Lots of majesty around the space shuttle. China wouldn't know majesty if it came up and bit it in the face.
That's right.
Okay. U.S. leaders have claimed China has a satellite with a grappling arm. And said its existence highlights the needs for increased funding to match the Middle Kingdom. Is that like Middle Earth? Anyway. Russia's expanding orbital arsenals. In the hearing, U.S. Space Command Commander General James Dickinson outlined the current state of affairs as follows. China is building military space capabilities rapidly, including sensing and communication systems and numerous anti-satellite weapons. All the while, China continues to maintain their public stance against the weaponization of space. Similarly, concerning Russia's published military doctrine calls for the employment of weapons to hold us and allied space assets at risk. Thank you, General. That was very informative. Dickinson described China's space services as robust, inclusive of high-tech radar imagery and intelligence data complemented by improved launch vehicles and global navigation. While individual technologies seem benign, collectively they can mask military activities, particularly as Beijing actively seeks space superiority. Of specific concern is China's ability to destroy other nations' satellites, as Dickinson pointed out in written testimony, which was a PDF, according to this article. Glad they had to point that out. The Middle Kingdom's space program is second only to the United States in the number of operational satellites. I'm not going to read his other quote. So, China's, they're investing They're investing in a lot of things. And
my concern was you see Starlink and all these other satellite companies, and there's of course a million satellites up in space right now. And then you get somebody like this that maybe destroys one and starts that chain reaction, and you get a bunch of space junk up there, you know, because they didn't like something that the United States was doing, or vice versa. And then we have a big problem on our hands.
I think we need to work collaboratively rather than competitively. We'll get a lot further.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. Well, look at GPS. Look at that. That, I would argue, probably changed the world at some level.
And, oh, definitely it did. Mm-hmm. Saved our marriage.
Oh, so you'd have to stop for ask for directions
or argue about which exit it is. No, I just use
the GPS. Oh, okay.
Can you read the map? Yeah.
See, I figured you're going to say she wants me to stop for ask for directions. I wasn't going to do that, but see, GPS solved the problem.
You can get mad at the GPS instead of mad at your spouse.
Yeah, why did Google turn us down this dead end road?
We're at the edge of the river and it says continue for 100 feet. That's not a good sign.
Have you ever had Google Maps really take you to the wrong spot?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't Google Maps, but it was TomTom.
Yeah. Well,
I think it was in the UK, they had one spoke of a roundabout that was shut down and they kept steering me down this like residential neighborhood, and I hit this concrete barrier. And I could see the roundabout like another 100 feet ahead. It says, continue to the roundabout. I can't have to turn around. And it did that to me twice.
Well, that, yeah. Well, that's the good thing about Google Maps is that it keeps up with a lot of the closures and stuff. I was talking to somebody the other day about how far it was to drive from here to another place. And they said, it said an hour and 30 minutes. And I was like, yeah, that's probably about right. He goes, no, depends on traffic. I'm like, well, sure. But, you know, they didn't realize that Google Maps understands what speeds people are going.
Yeah.
So it gives you a really close approximation when you're going to get there. They didn't realize that it took that into consideration. Because I was like, I've tried to beat it, you know, the time. I don't know if you ever tried that, try to beat the time it says you're going to be there. And I can only do it by a minute or two. It's kind of hard.
Depends how fast you drive.
Okay, moving along.
Moving along then into the Hacks and Strange Stories. This one's yours. Your turn.
Oh, okay. And you know what? I like repurposing old stuff for projects. I did this.
A few more neutral pronouns in there for you.
Yeah, I didn't. I've used an old Android phone as a webcam and almost like a baby monitor, which Samsung is doing that with their old phones. So if you have some old Samsung phones, you can load it up with some software they'll give you,
okay,
and use it as an intelligent baby monitor. So you can put it in the room, and if your baby starts crying, it will alert you, and then you can listen in.
Well, I have the old Samsung phone, but I don't have any babies, so we're done.
Yeah. Well, you can also use it with smart things to turn off and on lights. It'll use sensors.
Read the article. What's it say?
Anyway, I thought it was a neat use of old product, but this is too. So right now, most people use Android Auto as their primary with their primary device, and that makes perfect sense given that this is the most straightforward way to handle calls. No, I would not like to get notifications.
I just got that too. We must have pulled up the page at the same time.
Right. So it's the most straightforward way to handle calls and take your favorite, listen to your favorite music and stuff like that. But in some cases, turning to a secondary phone to power Android Auto makes a lot of sense, especially if you equip it with a SIM card that shares the same number and data plan with your main device.
Can you do that?
I assume you can, but I wasn't aware of that. Maybe you can. Let me get two SIM cards. So not only that you're not losing anything, but you can also forget about plugging your primary phone in with Android Auto just to start automatically, you know, when you start, when you get in your car. So someone on Reddit managed to take an old, take the whole thing to a completely new level, as what they did was to convert an old OnePlus One into an Android Auto powering device. Whenever, even without a battery, that is, as the unit on this phone, the battery is already dead. So how is it possible for Android Auto to auto launch Android on an Android phone without a battery? That isn't a project for the average Joe, but it requires some small tweaks to get it up and running at the end of the day. And you can go and look at the article. Mm-hmm. It says, in theory, blah, blah. Anyway, so you can repurpose. What he did was he repurposed an old phone for Android Auto. And I thought it was pretty cool. It reminded me of the Samsung repurposing their old phones for different things in your house.
You had to do a little bit of soldering. A
little bit of soldering, get around the battery issue, but this is pretty cool. And it's, you know, if you think about it, really, even your old phone is still capable of a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe not day-to-day activities, but the camera works, the light sensors work, GPS works. So
USB port works.
Yeah, just kind of sad. People screen just works. You know, toss them out or have them
or donate
around.
Them or repurpose them. I mean, we trade them in. Yeah. They do something with them.
Two old phones over here, but there's nothing wrong with them, technically.
I don't think I have any old phones at this point. Well, except the one in my pocket.
I didn't know you could get two cell phone numbers, though, or two SIM cards.
It wouldn't be a copy of the SIM card, but the second SIM card would work with the same number. Would they both ring?
Well, you know what? The same number. That's a good question. I don't know about that, but I do remember T-Mobile, they did a thing where if you got a phone, you had a certain line of service and you bought a tablet, they give you service for it too. They give you another SIM card and it's all tied to your account. So I guess there's several people on your account that have the same, they're on the same account, but have different numbers.
Right. They're on the same plan, but this clearly said SIM card with the same phone number.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's the part I didn't understand. It must be possible. I know you can clone SIM cards, but that's not something the average citizen can do.
No, I probably wouldn't.
Let's give a shout out to the chat room. I've got John Miller Jr. and Amy Bowen in Facebook. And as we mentioned earlier, Ralph Wangler on YouTube. So there's somebody else out there. There's a few other somebody else's.
So we got John Miller Jr. and Amy, who is trying to educate us.
Yep.
She said they referred to China as the Middle Kingdom because that's the literal meaning of the Chinese characters used for quote unquote China in Chinese. She says, I did study this in college. Very good.
That's pretty cool.
And we were laughing and acting stupid. She's over here educating us.
She's calling it Middle Earth.
That's right. Thank you, Amy, for keeping us straight.
I'm throwing out the pop culture references, just like most people throw out this podcast.
Yeah, or they're all phones.
Swipe done. Join us Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time on Facebook or YouTube and set up those notifications so you know when we're going live. All right. Let's also, while we're here, thank our patrons. We should have, we should have some music for thanking the chat room.
That's what was missing.
The chat room needs music. We have like music for almost everything else except that. I'll find some. Thank you very much, patrons. This show is brought to you by you. And you keep this show running with your gracious contributions for as little as $1 a show. We need the Patreon button up there. There we go. Did I miss something along the way?
No. They're the oil in the cogs.
They're the fuel in the cylinders that keep the pistons going.
Alexis, the hydrogen sipping engine.
Only we're currently running on a 27-cylinder engine, which is a weird number, but there you have it. Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, who's joining us tonight live in our chat and educating us about Middle Kingdom. Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, happy birthday. Chris MC, Dan D. Mancoyer, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen. This is like being among friends at this point. They're not listeners. These are friends.
Absolutely.
Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrawin. Thank you very much, Christina and Kyle and Leon. Man, we really appreciate everybody who's out there who does this. It is so gratifying to us to be able to, in fact, this is being recorded on the second day of the month, and I just got all those emails that say, you just paid a whole bunch of money to your hosting provider. You just paid for storage. Yeah. You just paid for, it's like, yikes. Okay, then. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mark and Mike and Chris and Saturday Morning Media. Thank you, Stephen and Steve and Steve and Steve. So that would be Stephen Weshey, Steve Therrien, Steve Cody, and Steve London.
Welcome to the Steve Show.
My three Steves. Da, 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 da. You can help join us and offset the cost of this show by going to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And not only do you get our undying gratitude on each episode, but we'll also record something very special just for our patrons. It's called our Patreon show.
Yeah.
Originally named, right? So let's send the Imperial marching band out. Whoops.
And actually, kinda... last week, if you were quick, you probably could have listened
free
to
sample!
It.
Free sample! Free sample!
Yeah. Things got mixed up and we ended up posting the across the stream, so to speak.
I woke up Monday morning, I'm like, Technorama's not supposed... No, I think you posted it on the right day.
Oh, yeah. Everything was fine. Like, it's Wednesday morning. You're like, hey,
Wednesday morning,
I got
or
up.
Tuesday night, whatever it was, I got up and went, 24 minutes. Either the recording is clearly wrong or uh-oh.
Yeah. Oops.
But that's all right. Free sample. And it was a pretty good show, too. I got to admit, it was a nice discussion. So we've got another one planned here.
Well, that part was on me, so... The good part.
Maybe we'll get some people going, ooh, I'd pay for that content.
Yeah.
Nobody has yet. I checked. That's one of my duties before we put together the show notes is any new patrons that we need to mention? Anybody leave the hive ship? Okay. Let's get
By the way, did you have anything? I know I passed through me, the remote section was empty. Did you watch anything?
Nothing new. I just got into season 3 of Stargate Atlantis. Star Trek Voyager is on pause while I rip through Atlantis and haven't watched anything new.
I started watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix.
That is a good show. I need to just
I couldn't remember if you had seen it, but,
right after it came out.
I think I'm on episode 4. It is good. They really nailed the 60s aesthetic as costume and the set design. Wow, it's fantastic. But yeah, it's a good show.
I've got to bang out a movie or something. I need to just take a diversion from mainlining series.
Well, you know, Friday, I had my second shot and I had Thursday I did. And then Friday I was having the hangover, the vaccine hangover. So I was having foggy brain and feeling a little cruddy. Not it wasn't unmanageable, but
yes.
So I ended up the end of the day laying on the couch watching Star Trek, going from one movie to the next just kind of moving along. So it was like a regular sick day. Start watching Star Trek.
I've had days like that. It was earlier this week. I was really tired. And I was building a condition in ServiceNow, you know, we have kind of that condition builder, sort of like you do with your music player where you can say artist is Billy Joel kind of thing. Well, I was staring at it. And I was supposed to say state is work in progress. And I pulled up the first part where you choose which field, you know, is it priority? Is it state? Is it description? And I'm looking for work in progress in that list. And I'm just staring at it going, why isn't work in progress in here? It took about 3 seconds before I realized I wasn't on the right field.
No.
That's when you know it's time to back away from the computer. Yeah. When you're not even on the right field and you're looking for the wrong thing.
Right. Yep.
All right, let's do the Geek Library, shall we?
Yep.
I believe it's the Dave Dorman Theme 1 MP3.wave. What kind of file name is that? MP3.wave.
Oh, yeah. I think you said that last time.
Like I was tired that day too.
Yeah. Well, I had two different related stories to Matchbox cars, excuse me. And so the first one, this Pennsylvania man owns over 40,000 die-cast vehicles worth more than his house. And to look at the pictures alone, it looks like a store. I mean, he's got inventory.
They are in the package too.
Yeah. And they're all in his garage. They're the packages. And then they show pictures of his real cars, which is kind of throwing me off. Then there's plastic containers that have, I guess, loose cars and maybe some that are packaged.
That's fun.
It's amazing. What's that?
That's no fun. Man, we used to play with these things.
Oh, I got the here.
I don't have mine anymore. We used to set up the orange.
No. See what I got here.
Put your headphones back on.
You good? So see, I've got within reach. I got the Mach 5. I got Knight Rider.
Do you remember the old orange racetracks that used to connect together?
Yeah.
And you make the loop to loop and you're running around like down the stairs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, those things are awesome. And then I even sent you one of these, I think. DeLorean.
Yes, my DeLorean is over there.
Yeah. So anyway, so we all have at least one person around us who is a collector. Stamps, beer, bottles, energy drink, cans.
Podcasts.
Yeah, podcasts. I collect podcasts. Old coins, diecast vehicles, you name it. I've lost track of how many Hot Wheels cars have gone through my hands over the years. If I did the math, it would probably be around 1,000 to 2,000 pieces. There was a time when I thought that I had a decent sized collection, but then I came across Andy Goodman, who lives in central Pennsylvania. Says collecting is more than just buying items. So don't ever think that owning an entire closet filled with diecast vehicles parked as if they were real will come in even remotely close to what some major collectors have amassed. For example, Andy's man cave consists of a whole garage teeming with boxes upon boxes of various makes, models, and sizes. The storage and display area is quite simply any boy's childhood dream. That would be us, right? And there might be even larger collections out there. Naturally, Andy was fascinated with cars from an early age, but it was around the age of 14 when he realized that he wanted to be involved in the automotive industry in one way or another. He mentions this to his family who was not into cars, and that his passion for anything on wheels grew as he got older. And I can relate to that. I'm reading from the author's point of view here. I can relate to that, as never had somebody in my family with such a strong interest in cars as himself. So as most of us did, Andy grew up with Hot Wheels as well as Transformers and G.I. Joes, but he most often gravitated to toys that were vehicles and turned into vehicles like the Transformers. Things evolved naturally for him. And at age 16, his father helped him get his first car, a 1981 Ford Mustang with nearly 200,000 miles on the clock. That happened back in early 90s, and it didn't take long for him to start upgrading that car. Within 2 months of ownership, the Mustang was already rolling around on custom wheels, tires, stereo system, taking up all the money he had managed to raise over the past summer project.
Of course it did.
Yeah, usually mine was into repairs, but okay. Before diving into his diecast collection, he was curious to know what he's driving nowadays, and it seems the Mustang fever hasn't gone away. He's got a 1990 Mustang GT convertible, a 93 Mustang Cobra, and three more comfortable vehicles, including a 2019 Chevrolet Suburban. I'm going to skip down here and talk about his cars. Buying Hot Wheels can be very addictive. I'm sorry, I'm skipping around here. At first, when you're out buying just a few items a week, before you know it, there's a fresh new package on your porch every day. Sounds like a comic book collection to me.
Or Amazon.
Yeah, or Amazon. At this point, Andy's collection is made up of 40,000 unique pieces. Even if they were all 99-cent items, that would be still impressive. But there are many more special items in there he adds to his collection to ensure for more than his house. He started with Hot Wheels, but these days he buys products from manufacturers like M2 Machines, Jada, Muscle Machines. While most affordable ones are under a dollar in terms of price, there are some in his collection that can fetch as much as 10 grand. Wow.
I'm sure it's collectibles. There's probably some rare items that he's got that nobody else does.
Well, sure. I mean, even my meager comic book collection, I've got a few that are $20, you know, or whatever. I mean, there's value on them, but to me, they're my comic books.
I'd be curious to know what he does for an occupation, or if this is his occupation, is just dealing with these commodities.
He could.
And is there a Mrs. Goodman? or a Goodman partner, we'll say.
Yeah, I don't know. That's to be determined.
Yeah, I always wonder what people with this level of collection have. Are they doing something other than the collection their whole life? I mean, not that there's anything wrong. If you can make a living out of doing what you love and you love collecting this stuff, that's awesome. Yeah. But if it becomes like the chief consumer of your revenue.
Yeah, you better have a good revenue stream.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I see little like RV trucks as a Toys R Us, like a delivery, you know, like a 18-wheeler kind of truck. There's all kinds of vehicles in there. That's pretty cool. Spam, Yokohama, Ford. They're all like the semis. That's
also
pretty cool.
Also related. We have the 100 car treadmill race.
Yes. And this put a smile on my face. I didn't realize there were four of them, but I watched this one. Have you seen it?
It's 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes long.
Yeah. So this dad and his kid put these, all their, the Matchbox cars on the treadmill.
Yep.
And started up, and they progressively sped it up. But at the beginning, him and his son kind of announced the race like they were commentators on the race. And then as the race starts, you know, they're like, oh, we got the Cheerios car coming up. And it really is fun to watch. So if you get a chance, go over and watch. It's only 3 minutes, but it is entertaining. And it looks like the cars are actually
passing each other, yeah, or crashing, and they crash and they wind up going.
Yeah, they fly off the end. And what's funny is as the speeding up, some of the cars
look like they're drafting.
Yeah, they do move forward. Some of them, anyway. So yeah, I won't spoil it for you, but yeah, it's kind of fun.
So who wins? I'm going right to the end.
Are you?
Nobody wins. They all crashed or
no, wait. No, there's cornflakes.
There's nobody at the end.
No, don't go to the very end.
Yeah, they just show an empty treadmill. That's sad.
No, there's two. No, they go to about 3 minutes and 2 seconds.
Too late. Close the tab. Nobody won. Spoiler alert.
There was two cars, and then the one in the front got loose, and then next thing you know, it looked like a real race.
John Miller says, I collect reasons to be angry.
Oh, okay. Right.
I collect other people's dreams and I crush them.
That's right.
That brings us to our question of the week, which is, what's a quote that permanently changed the way you look at things?
Yeah.
You need glasses.
A quote from your doctor?
It's true. Maybe I'm taking this a little too literally.
Stop being stupid. That's what I keep hearing, but act your age.
And for those of you who might get an accidental Patreon show, our topic of the week is going to start out with, keep a spare cork in your pocket. I'll explain that on the show.
Yeah, I'm curious. All right.
There's a story to that. It came up in our family email thread this week. So I said, All right, that's where I'm going to start the discussion. So John Miller Jr. says, everybody lies. Dr. Gregory House. There was a real fun quote. This is a Reddit thread from a while ago, but it was posted to Jack Mangan's Facebook group. And it was about the phrase, knowledge is power. And the quote is by a man named Francis Bacon. But the author of this article just heard, knowledge is power, Francis Bacon. And he heard, France is bacon. Okay. So he, as he grew up, he's like, okay, I understand the knowledge is power part, but I never understood the Francis Bacon thing. And everybody would just say, knowledge. If somebody said knowledge is power, and I replied to them, Francis Bacon, they wouldn't look anything. They're like, okay, nothing weird was said here. And one time I asked my school teacher and I said, well, can you explain this knowledge is power, Francis Bacon? And she went on for 20 minutes about knowledge is power and never said anything about Francis Bacon. And I went, this isn't making any sense.
Yeah, usually they're croissants, not and pastries, not bacon. It's funny.
Oh, that was Francis Bacon. And so I put in the comments. I said, Jose, can you see? And to the Republic for Richard Stans.
Right.
We're not sure where Richard Stans. Anyway, that's our enlightened thought of the day. Let's get us out of here. It is the end of the show. Thank you for sticking around with us. Thank you for watching on
YouTube.
You're welcome.
Facebook. You're talking to a listener. I'm sorry.
And thank you, Craig, for all the help you provide every week in putting this show together and getting it out there most of the time in the right order.
Oh, I'm taking the blame on that one. I got
one out of, what is it, a few hundred at this point that we've done for Patreon shows. I think there's been
600 episodes. I can count a few errors here and there.
We've only had Patreon shows since like 2016. So
there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. And thank you very much. If you want to get in touch with us, www.chuckchat.com/Technorama or search for Technorama Podcast on the internet. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right, 101, everybody.
We forgot to
put
the contact information on the screen. 707-530-CHAT. There we go. Sneak that one in.